Welcome to Empire Building, the podcast where we talk about building big businesses and even bigger lives. I'm your co-host, Sarah Reynolds.
And I'm Kimber Lovett Minkiti.
Well, today we got a DC Metro Empire Builders takeover.
That's right. Watch out. The Mid-Atlantic is here to stay.
Yes. It's Kimber and I, and we are both born and raised Virginia girls. And now Kimber lives in the wonderful District of Columbia, and I live 45 minutes from her. And so we're excited to do our first ever podcast of just the two of us.
I know. When we jumped over, we're like, wait, this is our first time doing just the Virginia show.
Seriously. Yes. Who would have ever thought that this is our first time? But I'm excited because I always learn so much from Kimber. And so I was like, I woke up so pumped up that I got to get to record with you today and learn.
I did too. Like when we realized it, what, yesterday or the other day, I was like, oh my God, I get to do it. I think it's just the two of us. It's going to be so fun.
Yes, it will. So you're in for a treat today because we're going to talk about a topic that actually, I don't know if I've ever heard a podcast or heard a leader talk about this. And it's something called decision fatigue. So today we're going to talk about what is decision fatigue. So A, what is it, since it's not talked about a lot? Okay. Yep. What are the signs sort of to watch for, and then what to do about it, in terms of decision fatigue. And so have you ever experienced decision fatigue, Kimber?
Well, it's one of those things that you're right, Sarah, like you don't hear about a lot, but when you hear the two words together, I'm like, wait, I think I have that, right? Like, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yes.
Like those are both things that I feel like I'm like, wait a minute, right? Especially as leaders, as women leaders, like the amount of times a day from the littlest to the biggest that we are like, you just have things flying at you. Some significant decisions that are being asked to be made sometimes really quickly, but definitely like just from the moment like our feet hit the floor in the mornings, it's like, boom, boom, boom.
Yes.
Yeah. So I heard it, I was like, I got it. I need more.
Yes. No, that's how I was. I actually had an experience about a month ago that led to me doing a lot of research on this topic. So it was a Friday. I had worked a full week, and just like Kimber, we're going hard. Okay. We're going hard at work and leading our empires. And then we're going hard at home, right? We both have young babies at home. They're growing up. They're growing up.
I know. I like to still say that, but then you start to see them like, oh, yeah.
I know.
We have the range. We have bigger babies and we have smaller babies.
Yes. But we are in the thick of activities and making decisions on discipline conversations and all of these things. So we're going hard, right? So it was a Friday, and I thankfully was working from home, and I don't work from home a lot, but I think this was a God thing that I was working from home. So it was in the middle of the day. I couldn't think, like I couldn't process anything. My team members were coming at me with questions, and I kept saying like, I don't know. And I literally was spiraling. George came into the room. I had just gotten off the phone with a team member, and I just started crying, like bawling. And he goes, "What's going on?" Because that's not normal for him to walk in and that happen. And I said, I don't know. I said, I can't do this today. I had a really big meeting at 4 o'clock. So this was like lunchtime. Okay. I'm talking a major meeting at 4 o'clock, where I had to be on my game. Like I had to be ready to go. I was meeting with some powerhouses in the real estate industry about a very serious topic. And I looked at him and I said, I can't do it. I'm going to have to cancel. And he looks at me and goes, you can't cancel on XYZ, the people that he knew I was meeting with. And I said, I don't know. I've never felt like this. I was so overwhelmed. And he goes, he took my phone and he goes, I need you to like, I'm going to call the team and you're going to take an hour nap. And I was like, a nap? It's Friday.
It's Friday. And yeah, it's not like it's the middle of the day.
Yeah. And I was like, but I didn't know what to do. So I just listened to him. So I was like, okay, here's my phone. And I took a nap. I woke up. I ended up being able to do a good job in the meeting. And then afterwards I was like, what happened? And I started researching. I I can relate it to like a panic attack. Like that's how I had never had one before, but that's like what I did that day. I had a legit panic attack. So I started researching panic attacks and leadership. And then all of these articles started coming up about this thing, decision fatigue. And I was like, okay. So I was at my max. I was literally totally fatigued. I could not think, could not process, couldn't make another decision. And so that's what led to this episode being recorded today, because I'm now passionate about understanding decision fatigue. So
what I love is that you went the next level deep, because I think so often, especially for women, we get kind of like, oh, well, you have anxiety, you have a panic, you have this thing. And that's like the surface thing, right? But the answer was like, what's that next level deep? Because then it's actually like an environmental piece that you can impact, right? Which I think is so powerful. Because I think oftentimes we're just like, well, I just have X. And you're like, no, but what was actually fueling X that you could actually go and create a process or dig into or learn more about? And that's why I'm excited about this episode today, because I think we're going to actually unpack it so you can be like, I'm not just this thing. I actually, these are the things that were fueling it.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. I think after, you know, after experiencing that, I'm like, I don't ever want to feel that way again, right? So I started reading articles about it and started sending them to all of our circle and about this topic. And all of the articles had a little bit of a different sort of publications about it, had one thing in common, okay? We make a lot of decisions. Many of the publications said that on average, you make over 1,000 decisions a day. And that's the average human being. Okay. So the average human being is making over 1,000 decisions a day, from what to have for breakfast, right? To how to handle a very difficult situation to work. So from little things to extreme things, we're making thousands of decisions a day. And then I don't know about you, Kimber, but based on your empire that you lead, I mean, in my empire that I lead, I mean, that is even more than 1,000, because we aren't average in terms of our jobs, in terms of our roles that we play. And so when you're leading an empire, okay, you're making, in addition to the normal thousands that people make, we are making so many decisions each and every day, from basic things to major, major decisions. And so this is a very real topic for empire builders.
It is, for sure. And I think in an industry, right, as entrepreneurs, as business leaders, like you're saying, Sarah, like you're like 10X what the average person might be making. So we're going to look at some signs, right? So what are some signs that you might, if you're saying like I was, like those two words together sound like I could have it, right? Like I could be experiencing that. What are some other signs? So I love these, right? Just we're going to rattle them off. Emotionally reacting in a negative way. Like, how does your body feel? How are you emotionally responding to something? Struggling with concentration, feeling mentally drained, procrastinating when making a decision. This is one that I really struggle with, right? When I know that when things start to get, I'm overwhelmed with the decisions, then I just start to like push off, right? And so I'm not making the most important decisions because I'm not holding enough space to really come at them in the way that needs, that they need, you know, the attention that they need. Making an impulsive decision, feeling extreme overwhelm, right? Sarah, that was what you felt that day. Just extreme overwhelm in a situation where you're like, hey, this is not, you know, like it wasn't particularly unusual probably Friday in that you were making a lot of decisions, but that extreme overwhelm when you're like, okay, I've just reached the max capacity.
Yep. So I think understanding those six signs is critical to then being able to say, okay, what do we need to do? Right. I mean, now that I sort of understand this, I mean, we had a Her Best Life board meeting yesterday, and we were supposed to make a decision privately. And I was like, I'm not doing it. I object. Well, now that I'm reading these, I was like, oh, I was procrastinating making a decision. I probably was experiencing decision fatigue, meaning that we need to really look at, okay, how do we prevent it to where we can try to get ahead of these signs? Because the goal is to prevent it, right? As much as we can. We obviously can't prevent everything, right? We've got to make decisions. It's important. Okay. But how do we prevent it? So what we did is we have six keys to reduce decision fatigue, right? So instead, let's change our language here. I said prevent. We're going to say reduce. Okay.
Reduce.
So I like six keys to reduce decision fatigue. Okay. So the number one key for number one, okay, key for reducing decision fatigue. Okay. Number one is you want to protect your mindset, in particular, your self-confidence. Okay. One of the things that I found is that when I am struggling with making a decision or not making a decision, many times the layer that I'm struggling with is actually self-confidence in my ability, to where I then like almost obsess over a decision needing to be made because I want to make the right one, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's really a fear of failure a lot of times, right? Which I think both Kimber and I struggle with that probably more than our co-hosts, I would say.
Yeah. Well, and I think what I realized too, and we talked about this in some of the other episodes, is that's often tied to perfectionism.
Yes. Right?
When you have a very front-facing world where it's not like, you know if you make a decision, there's a whole audience of people that are going to criticize that decision, right?
So yeah.
Like it can make it that much harder because you're then thinking all these, I got to be right. Not only that, you impact the lives, right? Our organizations are so large. The decisions we make aren't just impacting us and our families, but often they're having significant
huge
reach.
Yeah, for sure. So protecting your mindset, I think I was reminded of this. I'm doing right now, John Maxwell has this leadership devotional. It's a quick read every morning on leading. And one of the recent devotions I did talked about how if you are put in a leadership position, you need to know you're capable. Meaning like if you're leading others, if you have someone that has given their life to your leadership, meaning that they've said, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to be part of your empire. Okay. You need to know that you're capable and have some self-confidence in your ability, right? And remember that perfection, exactly what Kimber just said, perfection is the enemy of progress, right? Progress is actually impossible if we don't make decisions. So many times we're going to make mistakes in our decision-making, and that's okay, right? Indecisiveness is actually worse for our people than making a perfect decision. So if you wait, I'm experiencing this right now. We waited a long time on an important decision, and I held it back because I wanted to make the perfect one. And we're seeing all of the ripple effect of how delayed we were in the decision. I keep asking myself, had I just made a decision, our team members would know, okay, this is the route we're going in, versus it took so long and then now we're having to sort of backtrack. So like indecisiveness sometimes is worse than making a wrong decision. And so make a decision, be confident in your abilities. Don't try your best not to question, and know that perfection is the enemy of progress. So let's make progress by making a decision.
Yes. And one of the things that helped me, at least when I feel like I'm really struggling, was when someone said to me, indecision is a decision. You're essentially deciding not to do
something. Good.
Like, right? It is a no.
Oh, good.
And it was sort of an interesting way that like, hey, when you're really struggling, we think that we aren't making the decision, but the lack of that, right, which is exactly what you're saying, Sarah, you actually did, like you told the team no, because
yeah,
you hadn't made the decision yet, right?
Yes.
So then people have to build around or do the next things. And that was a big one for me. You actually did. You just didn't actually come to it directly yourself, which I was sort of like, ooh. So when I think I'm like, oh, let's delay that. Let's delay that. That's sending a message, especially as a leader,
so
about
true
what's important and the decisions we're willing to make. So,
so yeah, true.
Just when I think about that.
Awesome. Yes, love it.
Well, I kind of love this one because you just think about ways that you can decrease the number of kind of simple decisions that you make. We hear this a lot. I mean, I know Gary Keller says, like, right, you look at him and if you've seen him present or teach multiple, you're like, hey, gosh, he pretty much wears the same thing. Right?
Yeah.
He's wearing the same thing. And when you make that, like, that's a simple way to just take a decision off the radar for you. And it might be a little harder as women, right? Like to not wear the same thing every day. But I do know like some high performing women that just have a very simple wardrobe.
Yeah.
Like, right. They know it's probably why a lot of us loved COVID, good and bad, right? Like I know I loved that I could just put on leggings and a sweatshirt every day for about
yes
a year and a half.
Yeah.
It's probably why we got so much more done during that period of time.
True.
That was, there was a lot of decisions that were already made for you. So being able to focus that mental energy on the most important thing, I think it really goes to like, do you wake up every day at the same time? Do you have the same morning routine? Do you eat the same thing for breakfast? Like you don't even have to think about it. And it just, it allows you to have a little bit more of a reserve as you're digging into the more critical decisions. So really coaching, right, your team too, to minimize the options, narrow down. And I love this one. I mean, we just did this on a call, right, in our board meeting. Really see if you can narrow yourself down. Are there decisions that you can eliminate? Are there things that you can just decide or recognize that those aren't the most critical so that you are really narrowing down to the top solutions that you have?
I learned that so much with parenting. I remember opening up, I was standing with Olivia, my oldest, and I opened up her underwear drawer and I said, pick one. And she stood there like completely frozen of this pile of all of her options. And I learned, okay, I need to take two out and say, pick one. And she quickly picks one when there's not as many options. And so when we can actually train our team, like they are fully capable of knowing the best two options. And so train your assistant, train your team to say, okay, I trust you to pick the best, present to me the best two options that you see. And then that eliminates so many decisions for you to make, like to navigate through when you have, okay, these are the best two. Okay, I picked this one because that's the one, the best decision here, right? So I learned that so much with parenting right away.
What? Right away. And I think it applies to your team too. And we want the input of a team, right? Especially I think as women, often we're collaborative. It's one of our strengths.
Yes.
And so sometimes you come to your team and you're like, hey, we're going to do this. Here's six options, right? And the reality is like, you could come to them with the top two or the top three. So even narrowing the decisions that you're looking to get input in can help a group to get to that decision quicker. It's the same strategy, right? Which like, what are these two? And then, you know, as the leader, often we're going to be comfortable with either option.
Yes.
So that influencing where we're like, pick you, you've kind of been like, okay, here we go. I would be comfortable with A or B. And yep. Then you get to get the input from the rest of the people around you.
That's so good. Okay. So number one, protect your mindset, in particular self-confidence. Number two, do your best to decrease the number of decisions from what you wear, right, to all the way to helping your team members make some decisions for you to present you the best two, right? Number three, okay, you want to make lists and prioritize the most important decisions that need to be made that day. This has been sort of a game changer for me. I think so many times we think we need to get it all done, right? I mean, most, if you're an empire builder, you've got some achiever in you, right? We like to achieve things. And the more we can achieve, the better we feel, you know? Well, it's really when you're building that empire, when you're trying to reduce decision fatigue, you want to protect your mindset on the most important decisions, right? That's why I liked number two and what Kimber said so much. Because if you can, for example, my mother-in-law, she is one of my heroes. She is a powerhouse female, led top executive in her company, had three kids, and kept her household amazingly ran. But she knew if it was Monday, this was what was for breakfast. It was Tuesday, if this was for breakfast. And I look back at that decision she made to do that. That helped her with when she got to work and she had to make a critical decision on how many people to lay off or how many people to hire, right? Like that kind of decision was on her desk. Well, she didn't waste her mind space with the earlier decision that day. Instead, she's focusing. So are you making a list and prioritize? What are the most important decisions for you to make that day? And make those the priorities of your mind that day. And how can you eliminate the other ones or other people make the decisions of the things that maybe aren't as important?
And Sarah, what I love about that, and I just like, is that other people often in our lives crave the structure. So what I find with my boys is the certainty of knowing that Tuesday is Taco Tuesday.
Yes.
Not only do I not have to think about it, they don't have to ask me about it. And half of decision fatigue is that people are coming to you with questions. And so the more structure that you have in place around some of these really simple things then eliminates, right? You've empowered, and we're talking about that in the next one, people, even your family, to be like, hey, we do pizza on Fridays and we do Taco Tuesdays. Nobody has to, even the four-year-old last night said, Mom, like, I'm so excited. Like, what, we get pizza tomorrow? They just know. And it creates that both structure that many people in our lives are looking for us to provide and eliminates a decision that you have to make.
So good. Yeah. So good.
So let's talk about how you get there, right? Because yes. I think leaning into delegation is really how that becomes possible, right? The things that the people cannot solve for themselves, that they're bringing them to you. And that's what you want to really make sure you're having time to do. So when you're delegating and leading others, and you said this already, Sarah, right? If they've got it 80% right, then it can be 100%. And I think yes. that has been a huge one for me, right? Like I sometimes am like the perfectionism side is like, well, send it to me and I'm going to edit it. And then I become this like bottleneck of the push out, the final decision. And I realized it disempowers people. You actually are hurting their confidence to be able to feel like they're building the decision-making muscle on their own. When we kind of have to touch everything, see everything, make sure it's 100% done before it can get out the door. And so that 80% right oftentimes is enough in most of our daily interactions. And it also helps empower people so that they can get it to the place where it's 100%. And I love this. I mean, some of the hacks, like I am an Instacart girl. Like I am Instacart shipped, Amazon, like all of these things that are just repeating. And those become, sometimes we think about delegation as it has to be a who, and sometimes it's a resource, right? It's a tool yes. that can help make that easier. And then it empowers my sitter at home. We share the Instacart order. So she will just like be like, hey, we're low on this. Am I good to go? And I'm like, yep, I don't have to think about the things because we have an agreement already on what goes in there. So I think what are your tools that help you make delegation with your who's and your how's possible?
I love that. I think this is something that we both have grown so much in our leadership, and what my both from hacks of being a mom making lots of decisions, and then also leading the empires and all of our amazing humans. And for both of us, I think we always want it to be 100% as right as possible. And I learned, and really my dad had the biggest influence on me on this, is because he saw how exhausted I had been. And he talked to me, he goes, why are all of your people coming to you? Like they're coming to you too much. And he goes, there's something you're doing that's causing them to come to you. And he identified, and he told me, he said, Sarah, if it's 80%, you want them to run with it. Like you're not looking for 100%. You're not looking for perfection. Okay. So what Kimber said was so right. We want to empower our people to make decisions. And then one of the things that I love that Gary has said, right, is authorship is ownership. And we learned this from him. He creates task force. So when one of us, you know, says X, you guys need to do X, Y, Z, he'll say, okay, go lead a task force on that. Like meaning go author the solution, present it to me. A, those of us that had ownership in authoring it are really going to take it seriously. Okay. And we're actually going to make it happen. And so were your people. So are there things that you could maybe give task force to your people to solve? It doesn't have to be you solving and making the decisions. Okay.
And it's really one of, I think, a genius leadership skill that we've learned in that. Because what he often, from I think early in the organization, that was often the loudest, most vocal, sometimes the most objective, like the people that were objecting the most to the thing. So if you've got somebody that's bringing you problems, and what we always know this, right? Talent, non-talent, who's bringing you the problems versus who's bringing you the solutions. Sometimes talent is identifying problems.
Yeah.
Real talent's going to show up when you say, great, I want you to chair or lead the group of people in the organization that are going to find the solution for that. And that actually will show you quickly who just wants to bring you the problem or who actually wants to bring you back a solution. So it empowers people to really not just identify an opportunity, but to really author a solution to it. It's a great way to both empower, to delegate, to knock a lot of those boxes down in one effort.
Yeah, it makes me think of the book. I know the author's name's Liz, but it's Multipliers. Yes. And it talks about that. And it talks about how sometimes you can actually have a talented person that has solutions, but if you are diminishing them when they come to you with the solution and like almost putting them down, like, well, that's not perfect. Let me make it better. Right. Then they'll actually stop coming to you with solutions. And then you'll take someone that was talent and all of a sudden you're viewing it like they're no longer talent, but really it's because you were putting them down for their solutions. Right. So one of the things I've learned, and I know Kimber, you've learned this as well, is like empowering our people, right? So much of decision fatigue is because our lack of empowering our people to make those decisions, to take to delegate, right? So we want, I know we spent a lot of time on number four, but I think it's so important to lean into delegation. And I hope you guys are hearing us. And it's something that we're always growing in, but lean in to delegation, because that's going to help you so much with decision fatigue.
So yeah, number- I'll just, one of my like honest moments, I know we spent a long on this one, but I had to sort of look in the mirror on that delegation, that sometimes it was a lack of being important or needed in the organization. And so when I was coming in to like show that I knew the thing or to show like I'm the leader, that it was often because I felt like, what am I, what that was my thing. And now it's not my thing anymore. Or somebody else got the ball. And that is actually what I wanted. But the feeling was like, well, am I being replaced? What am I going to do now?
Yeah.
And so I feel like I see that in a lot of leaders. They want that. But then when they get it, it's also slightly terrifying. So I think just being open to, if you feel like, hey, people aren't taking the ball, like you said, Sarah, is it that you're trying to like, what for you is driving the need for it to be perfect or done or have your little stamp on it before it goes out the door? And really like that can be one of the biggest really just squashers of empowerment.
So true. I love your transparency and vulnerability with sharing that, because I think I know I struggle there too. And I want to encourage all of our listeners, if what Kimber just said to you said resonates with you, one of the most powerful things I did was actually share that. I was vulnerable and transparent with my people about it. So telling them, I realize I fear being irrelevant. I realize I really want to be needed. So when you see me like take back something, or you see me not letting you run with it, or like just know that I'm working on it. I recognize it and I'm working on it. That then gave them permission to, in a loving way, saying, hey, like you are relevant, but in the best way you're relevant is to allow me to make this decision, not to try to micromanage the decision. Right. And so like share, if it resonated with you, what Kimber just said, be transparent and vulnerable with your people, that that's a struggle of yours, and you will see them rise and really surround you with that struggle and push you through. Cause that's what happened when I did that. So thank you, Kimber, for saying that. Okay. So let's go through them again. Cause it's so important. Okay. So protect your mindset, right? Number two, decrease the number of decisions by making things a little bit simpler, right? Same things to eat, same thing to wear, right? Number three, make lists and prioritize the most important. Number four, lean into delegation. Okay. Number five, take breaks. Oh my goodness. When George took my phone away and said, take a nap, okay, I know that I would not have been able to do as well as I did in that important meeting had I not taken a break. When you are feeling run down, when you're seeing these signs, right, that Kimber went through, the six signs that Kimber went through, when you're feeling that, okay, go for a walk, right? Take a break, change your environment, take a nap, have a fun conversation with your spouse, listen to music and dance, like take a break. Make sure that vacations are the priority. It's so important. Vacations should be on your calendar first. Time with your family should be on your calendar first. And then all of the work stuff is around that. Right? But make sure that you're adding in breaks into your calendar, as well as bigger breaks in terms of vacations.
Yeah. And this is another one where, depending on how your schedule is managed and who's managing it, that we can teach people to help us. Right. So I looked up 2 years ago, and I had it was a wild year. And I had 30 hours of scheduled meetings on my calendar, right? Of meetings that I was in. And so how that left, I mean, of course I was working 50 to 60 hours because I had to actually then go execute on all the things that we were putting in the meetings. And so one exercise was going back and saying, one, like this, you actually aren't your best. You're not the most productive. That we often confuse busyness with success, that I was busy. And in our, it certainly like Sarah, and in the real estate industry, like we coach a lot of agents who are like, well, I was really busy, but what were you busy doing? And so training the team to, one, was I really necessary? Was that meeting necessary? Is there another way? Did we need to have it weekly? And then making meetings 45 minutes instead of 60 minutes to allow for that transition. Because I think a lot of us in the COVID world got into like, you could just pop out of one Zoom and pop into another Zoom. And you might be like running into, hold on, give me a minute. I'm going to the bat. Like you literally weren't building any air in your schedule. And so one of my coaches said, you've got to create air. This doesn't work. Like you actually are not, like you said, Sarah, the break, actually allowed you to be so much more valuable in the meeting.
Yes.
And it's actually counter to what we think. We think, I'm just pressing through. I'm so busy. My phone is ringing. I'm doing all these things. But really, you're actually diminishing your ability to make good decisions, to be valuable, to add your best self into that. So it was a huge aha for me. And like just wiping out 10 hours of meetings, I think actually helped us be more productive.
So true.
Sort of crazy, but it actually is 100% true.
So true. And as someone that's an addict to that, meaning like you get it under control and then 6 months later you look up and it's back to the way it was, and somehow it got back to the way it was. This is like a constant. I've had an amazing coach now for 5.5 years, and probably every 6 months he has to have the same conversation with me that's just like what Kimber just said. And so I want to encourage you, just because you get it down once, it will sometimes, you got to relook at it again. So watch those signs, and when you see them, look at your calendar, because you're probably not getting those breaks just like Kimber said.
Yeah. And I really build it in. Like my Fridays, which has been such a fun thing about the podcast, is just implementation time. So I literally block. I don't do any meetings after 11 o'clock on Fridays that don't want to do. And that meant that there was like open white space. And sometimes I'm doing meetings, sometimes I'm recording, sometimes I get to get together with somebody that I really care about. But it also, just having that break built into my week was so powerful. And I know, Sarah, you, and I think Sue, like, had white space kind of built into your schedules to be able to process numbers or like show up as the leader that your team needed, not sitting in the office.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Well, this sort of goes with number six, but take us it home, because we sort of mix them together, because they are.
When you were saying it, I was like, those go together.
Yes,
which
they
is
do.
Really like that self-care. And I think, you know, Wendy said something that sort of, which she has a way of doing that kind of hits you right between the eyes. And she said, you want to build a life that you don't have to vacation from. Right? Build a life that you don't have to escape from to feel better. And that, I think, means self-care, not as like, I took my 2 weeks of vacation this year, but how do you build self-care? How do you build white space? How do you build recharge into your week, into your day? And really like have that be something that you're committed to doing. It's on your calendar. People know what it is. And that allows you to really show up in a way that reduces that fatigue.
Yeah. No, that has been a game changer for me in the last 9 months or so. I've had consistent white space on my calendar, and it's away from home, away from the office, and completely
away
me
in
my, away from my phone, like true thinking time, true, just me and my brain, thinking time. And so I want to encourage you guys to prioritize self-care, because that will so help, with this. So this was so fun as our first ever Virginia Girl podcast recording.
You're going to get more of us together. Yes. We like that, right?
We do. So thank you guys so much for joining us. Decision fatigue is such a real thing. So what do you want to watch for? You want to watch for if you're emotionally reacting in a negative way. You want to watch if you're struggling with concentrating, if you're feeling mentally drained, if you're procrastinating making a decision, if you make impulsive decisions, or if you feel extreme overwhelmed. If you have one of those signs, you are most likely experiencing decision fatigue. So our six keys: protect your mindset, right? Decrease the number of decisions, make lists and prioritize the most important, lean into delegation, take breaks throughout the day, and then prioritize self-care. If you do these things, it will allow for you to your brain to be used in the best possible way in a much happier life, which is all about our mission here, which is to help you build a big business, but not just a big business, an even bigger life. If you got something out of this episode, we would love, love, love a 5-star review and for you to share it with a friend. We appreciate hearing from our listeners, and thank you guys so much for joining us today. Bye.
Thanks, Sarah. Bye.